Qua sopra.
Ai.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast. I'm your co-host Alexander Gongi-Ruzic, joined as always by Samuel Rowan, episode 202, and it's a big one as usual, as it tends to be at this time of year. So I'll say it's a big one and just realize that it's the standard big one this week. Whitecaps make history, so that's certainly some big news. They beat the Sounders away for the first time in a long time. They now go test their chops against a true top MLS team. This one's for all the MLS pundits out there who've put an asterisk over the start of the Whitecaps season. But they haven't played any good teams. They're playing a pretty darn good team in the Red Bulls this weekend. Meanwhile, they also made some signings because weird MLS timings and rules. There's a deadline that kind of really didn't matter, although The Athletic, there were some articles I was getting like deadline day news, and there's a deadline day, like, cool. And then all of a sudden the Whitecaps signed a guy. Oh yeah, okay, this is real and this is happening. Whitecaps signed a guy. Meanwhile, CPL continues on, Canadian Championship starts, you got some, you know, League One BC coming up this weekend. Just an absolute doozy of all that news, as you can tell by just my shock and surprise reading through all this. But before we dive into this, as usual, Sam, how's it going this weekend? One that you got to enjoy some football, some local football. You didn't go on the crazy adventure that I did, but maybe that was better for your sanity and your overall sleep health.
Yeah, kicked off the soccer weekend in fashion, taking in VFC and the Halifax Wanderers out at Willoughby. Had a ton of fun there, and then was chilling at home on the couch watching the absolute chaos that was the Whitecaps' adventure down in Seattle. Must have been an interesting one to be there in person. I think there was, this was a huge opportunity for Seattle to get their season back on track, and it went as poorly for the Sounders as it possibly could have gone. I think you could tell in the discourse online during the match afterwards that the desperation was setting in Seattle. That's kind of how it felt from that third party perspective. Conversely, for the Whitecaps, obviously, coming off a tough loss at home the weekend previous, this was a huge shot in the arm, a huge boost, a reminder, hey, we've been off to a good start. And, I think, despite the red cards, the stuff within the match that we'll get into, the fact that the Whitecaps went to Seattle, won a match confidently, it is a bit of a sign that, maybe this team, at least kind of like in terms of maturity, leadership, the emotion behind the team, it feels like they've taken a step forward this year. The way they've started, all that stuff. Even if the football hasn't been perfect, I feel like this is just a more mature group, and you have to take advantage of what's in front of you. It seemed like the Whitecaps did that down in Seattle. So kudos there. So yeah, we're gonna talk a little bit of the Seattle match. We're going to tee up the Red Bulls this upcoming weekend. As you mentioned, Alex, after perhaps a bit of a softball schedule to start the campaign, Galaxy, Sounders away, Red Bulls away the last 3 weeks. That's a tough schedule right now, especially given the way the Red Bulls have been playing. So we're going to talk what they've been up to. We've obviously highlighted them a little bit in our Around MLS in 5 minutes, which we're going to dive into on this show as well. Relive some of the chaos, some of the storylines from this past weekend, what's upcoming as well. And then, we're going to dive into some CPL action. Obviously, we're, both in attendance at VFC. Alex was over on the island to take in Pacific versus Valor. And then last night, if you're listening to the podcast, we're recording Wednesday afternoon, but this was Tuesday night. Unfortunately, Vancouver FC bounced in the first round of the Canadian Championship once again by Cavalry. And for the second year in a row, in particularly excruciating fashion. So we'll dive into that a little bit as well. So Full slate, lots to talk about. We'll try to move through it in at reasonable speed, but yeah, looking forward to diving into all this stuff as always, Alex.
Yeah, the Vancouver Derby. No chance for it yet in the Canadian Championship. But hey, so sometimes what do they say? You gotta wait for good things. And at the same time, Vancouver Whitecaps Cavalry. That's a pretty decent matchup too, with some history behind it, et cetera, as we'll dive into. And hey, as you know, there's no bad matchups in the Canadian Championship, although you can't help but feel for the Vancouver FC, because I know how much they would have wanted a game like that, but wasn't meant to be. But let's just start. Yeah, Whitecaps in Seattle. And of course, for those who've been listening to the show, you don't need to understand how big of a win that it was, but it bears reminding, worth reminding how big of a win this is. We mentioned it last show, the last time they won in Seattle at Lumen Field. It wasn't even called Lumen Field. This was so long ago. I think it was still CenturyLink Field at the time. The whole, there was one Whitecaps player still even in the squad. Sam Adekugbe, unused substitute that day. He ends up starting this weekend and getting an assist on the winning goal. So maybe that's a bit prophetic, a bit fitting that he's the one to help break the curse in his return to the Whitecaps on the second go around. But yeah, first time in 8 years, over 8 years, they've won. It's kind of jokes because I asked Vanni Sartini about that after the game. He kind of laughed. He's like, wow, March 2016, I was still in Italy. He wasn't even in the US being a coach yet. He was like, yeah, I was still in Italy. Oh my goodness. And he was reminiscing on everything that's happened in the last 8 years since the Whitecaps won a game in Seattle. But yeah, even beyond that, three road wins in a row. Of course, again, critics may say that, oh, well, you beat teams, what, 15, 14, and 13 in the West on the road. So strength, yay for strength of set schedule SOS. But at the same time, you can only beat those in front of you. And they're winning games on the road, which, as we mentioned, and Vanni Sartini pulled out an interesting stat in the press conference. I didn't check, but usually he gets his info pretty spot on. He says the Whitecaps have the best road record since August of last year, when they went on that stretch of, I think they won like three out of four road games or something it was, and they drew one in there. Since then, they've been the best road team in MLS, which, hey, imagine saying that even just a year ago. And now, yeah, they're continuing to push best points per game in MLS, back within, striking distance of the Galaxy, who just keep on winning. Everything really seems to be back on course. And what's great is short memories. Twice now they've lost games. Twice now they've bounced back with emphatic wins. That can say a lot about a team's mentality. And so far, this Whitecaps team seems to be pretty strong between the ears, and that's allowed them to get off to this strong start.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as I kind of mentioned right off the top, that's the biggest thing that's stood out to me, right? Is that even watching that match live, and the first red card was really the tipping point of the whole match, right? Because things were relatively even up until that point. I thought the Whitecaps had some nice moments in possession, albeit maybe not the most dangerous of opportunities on earth. Seattle was just kind of sitting back and being pretty respectful, I think, of what the Whitecaps had to offer on the counter. And they had a couple of chances of their own. It seemed like there was an emphasis from Seattle to try to whip in balls that would give Yohei Takaoka some trouble. And they created a couple moments of confusion there that maybe the Sounders were unlucky not to take advantage of. But nonetheless, relatively even match. That red card moment, a big one. And obviously, it gives a huge advantage to the Whitecaps. But at the same time, that's, we're going to talk about this later on in the show. Going up a man does not necessarily secure you the result, right? Like these things are not guaranteed. And the Whitecaps had to manage that situation the right way. And I think I was impressed in the second half with the way that, they were just able to be patient, take advantage of those individual mistakes from the Sounders, which obviously were huge ones, like not to diminish how cataclysmic those errors were, like very, very poor. But the Whitecaps take advantage, they're clinical, and then I think they manage the rest of the match very well. So just again, speaking to that maturity, speaking to playing the opponent that's in front of you, the Whitecaps didn't get ahead of themselves in this one. in a road environment where maybe it could have been quite easy to get a bit ahead of yourself. You know, you see the first red card come out, now you think that's it, we've won the match. But I felt like they unlike the Galaxy the previous weekend, where maybe after Brian White scored that tying goal, their eyes were a little big and they got excited and then the match got away from them. This almost felt like the opposite of that, where there was no urgency to try to pounce on any kind of opportunity. It was just like, okay, we've been playing well, we're going to keep doing the same things and it'll come to us over time. And it did come to them. And you know, at the end of the day, you walk away with a pretty nonchalant 2-0 victory at Lumen Field. So, I mean, Alex, I guess we could just really start with the first red card. I think that my thought when I saw it live on TV for the first time was like, oh, that seems a bit harsh, or like, gosh, I'm not really sure that's a red card. It's one of those ones where the more and more you watch it, you see slow-mo, you see different angles, you see exactly what happened. You kind of go, okay, like I see how what Jackson Reagan did on that play is a red card offense. It's certainly one of those ones where, you know, if it's happening in the championship with no VAR, it's a yellow all day long. But this is
Yellow.
a this
That's
is
a
a
play on all day long in the championship.
exactly. But this is a point of emphasis in MLS. This is how they're officiating these kinds of incidents now. So ultimately, I think what the league is trying to do, and for the actual fact of like what Jackson Reagan did on the play, it's a red card foul. I just maybe the old school nature in me feels like it's a little bit harsh, but like, you know, facts don't really care about feelings, right? Like I think at the end of the day, it was the right decision. And you know, obviously then Seattle kind of demonstrated what a pure red card challenge was on the second red card. But you know, I think Vanny was right in his post-match commentary when he pointed out, you know, the red cards were a reflection of Vancouver's quality as well, because they were putting the Sounders in situations where they felt like they had to be aggressive, cutting out those opportunities. And when you're Jackson Reagan stepping up so aggressively, you put yourself at risk that kind of thing could happen.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to mention. It's good we start with the red card because obviously when there's two of them in a game, you'd be foolish to at least not assess the context of what happened and what it does to a game. But I think one point that has to be noted in this, A, the Whitecaps are really annoying to play against. Like in the sense that like some of the runs they make, how they defend, how they press, it's annoying. And I think this was interesting because this is a couple games now where teams have kind of gone off the rails. Like TFC, like they kind of just, it was frustrating, right? Like they gave up a goal 5 minutes in because Brian White was breathing down their necks and ends up winning a.
The Whitecaps even had this ability at times last season. We referenced the CF Montreal match, the Houston Dynamo match. This is a trait, I think, of Vanni Sartini teams. They've just maybe evolved a little bit this season.
Well, that's it. But when the offense is clicking, they're annoying. They're pressing high. They took two goals just off of picking Seattle's pockets, right? You can argue that's luck, but look at the scenarios. They trapped the guys, they put them in those positions, and they drew the two red cards just because they're being annoying as heck to play against. And I think that's the evolution of this team because the defense, they defend so much better. And the reality is, you're always going to get frustrated when you're playing a stingy, low event defense that makes things frustrating for you trying to get around guys like Utvik, you know, Blackman in this game, Laborda when he's in the lineup. Like they're annoying to play against. Kubas, like that guy's probably the most annoying guy to play against. And it's funny because he's the nicest guy, right? For an enforcer. He never fights, he never looks angry, he never argues, he just like goes around. But he just that's almost makes a guy like him more annoying because imagine you just have this guy nipping on your heels all game, taking you out every time you get the ball and you look over and it's just like he looks unbothered. That's almost like more annoying because, you know, when there's a hot-headed number six who just wants to rip your head off, you're kind of almost laughing. Like, who's this guy think he is? Guys like Kubas drive guys more. Like, that's what I mean. This Whitecaps team feels annoying, and I think that's contributed to the red cards. And I think one thing that's kind of lost in the discussion is where the game state was going before the red card, because that's something I kind of wrote about. I was in the stadium. I want to make sure before when the red card happened, I kind of tracked down the stats. when the Whitecaps had the red card, they were about 55% possession. Seattle averages 55% possession this year. Whitecaps average 44%. Before the red card, Seattle had kind of given up the ball to Vancouver and been like, all right, break us down. We know you guys are quality. We know you guys can hurt teams in transition. We don't want to play that game today. Break us down in possession. And that meant the Whitecaps were in control. And as a road team, you rarely see that team. How many times were we mentioning, say, last week after the Galaxy, the argument of, were the Whitecaps right to give up control at home and then, you know, open things up? We felt they probably weren't. Well, Seattle kind of were in that moment of what Seattle saw of the Whitecaps or what the Whitecaps saw of the Galaxy a week before, a team that can be lethal in transition, a team that can be lethal if you open the game up. And they're like, no, let's seed the ball. So I think what's interesting about the red cards is that they're a reflection of the Whitecaps play. And as for the first red card itself, because that was definitely the point of contention, I think it's important sometimes to remember a few things. I think a foul or red card can be harsh, and it can also be a red card. I think that's, you know, the rule book does not have room for feelings. It does not have room for he didn't mean it. There's no room for it was an accident. If so, there'd be no red cards. Well, maybe not no red cards. There's still guys who go out and like Alex Roldan. That was a definite like he meant that he wanted a little extra. He kind of walked off the field being like, did I just do that? Well, maybe I'll regret it when the fine and the suspension hits down the road. There's no room for that sort of interpretation. At the end of the day, when you look at what objectively happened, Ryan Gold received, no, you can't even say received a pass, tried to receive a wayward pass. And it's one of those rare moments where a missed pass ends up helping you. He receives a wayward pass. He's not close to it. Jackson Reagan gets freaked out because it's Ryan Gold, as you should. You don't want this guy with the ball in space. He steps up. Ryan Gold turns. His studs catch Ryan Gold right in the calf. It ticks all the boxes. It's off the ball, so that makes it a little more harsh than, say, it had been on the ball. At least you could be like, oh, he was playing the ball. It was clumsy, yellow. Move it on. It was off the ball, so it was reckless, which is, again, category two for red cards. Is he in control of his body? No, he caught him, and then C was the, you know, the contact where he caught him in the leg with studs. So ultimately, it ticks all three boxes. It's hard to debate, really, even. Just like I get if something where I get not seeing it live because that was hard to see. And that's the beauty of VAR, that you don't have these championship situations where it's a play on and then you don't give a red card. So, no, I think it was completely fair. And I think it's something where the Whitecaps had already kind of gotten what they deserved up to that point, and they kept at it after and were full value for the rest of what they showed, which is important to note that I didn't feel the red card changed the game as much as it might have felt. Seattle was already sitting back. They were already absorbing pressure. And it was more of a fair reflection of how the game state was.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, yeah, I saw a couple comments like in our post-match written stuff about how Seattle was clearly the better team up until the red card. And I was just like, I'm not so sure about that one, as you just outlined, right? And I mean, I think it's fair that like, I liked a lot of what I saw from Sam Atacubi up front. He's certainly one of the players that stood out, not only for the cutback that led to the Gold goal, but just a lot of stuff that happened in the first half before the red card. Now, I think there's questions about, like, should Ali Ahmed and Atacubi have switched sides earlier? Are there some little things they could have done tactically? Sure. But, you know, ultimately, I think that not every team and not every match is going to be like, prime Man City just swarming around the edge of the opponent's box. Like that's not a realistic expectation for 98% of teams. But I think what the Whitecaps did in the first half was control possession, you know, kind of take what Seattle gave them, try to get the ball to Adekubi, try to get the ball to Ahmed to open up some space for White and Gold. And I think there were moments where that was working. And, you know, I think kind of being patient, waiting for those opportunities. And ultimately, the red card opened the door before Seattle made any glaring errors on the ball that led to the goals. But I think, as you mentioned, the cards really did not change the game state as much as maybe it felt like it did. Because honestly, those individual errors at the back, that's not really about like lacking a numerical advantage, right? Like whether you have one striker or two strikers up front doesn't affect a misplaced pass at the back. I feel like that was the Whitecaps kind of game plan going in, was that they were gonna, kind of control at the match if Seattle gave it to them, and then take advantage of those opportunities the way they can, and it worked out. So, yeah, I would just kind of co-sign most of what you said there. And yeah, I mean, in terms of the match itself, as I mentioned, kind of, I think some certainly great to see Sam Adekunle back in the starting 11. I thought like a good little bit of ingenuity from Vanni Sartini to, hey, maybe he's not ready for the full defensive responsibility, all that tracking back, especially on turf. So find a role where you can get something out of him, but not kill his knees just yet. I thought that was good. And overall, I guess the other guy I would shout out is Bjorn Inge Utvik, who, man, he keeps the match in front of him. He's smart. He's in the right position. It's a low event defending at his best. And I feel like, as much as like I love Matias Laborda and his, raging bull nature, and Tristan Blackman can be a bit like yin and yang, where sometimes you get the high event, sometimes you get low event. It's just nice to have someone else in the mix like Utvik that provides something a little bit different, a little bit more of like a cautious approach. But he was still assertive when he needed to be in a couple of moments. So yeah, Utvik would be the other guy making another start for Vancouver that I just kind of wanted to give a hat tip to in terms of what I thought was a quality performance.
Yeah, and I think credit has to be given. Before the red card, the Whitecaps only gave up 0.29 XG to Seattle. They were defending very well.
It was all crosses and like set piece opportunities. It was that low event stuff. They conceded nothing from like middle of the park open play. There was nothing there for Seattle at all.
Yeah, and I think credit has to be given to the back three, and I think it's great because Vanni Sartini's now going to have questions to ask of his back three, and that's what you want when you bring in a guy like Utvik, because last year those same questions weren't really had of the back three. It kind of felt like it was Veselinovic, it was Blackman, and it was whoever Vanni was feeling on the day. It was the other option, right? Sometimes it was Laborda, sometimes it was Brown, sometimes it felt like Vanni was just hoping for either of them to step up. Whereas now we have four guys where you can all make arguments that they deserve to start in some capacity. Now I'm very curious to see what Vanny does going forward because, yeah, like you mentioned, it feels like for the zone system, that calming presence of Utvik, it just seems to work because he seems just so in his zone and so focused on what's around him that it's perfect that for that zone where you have to be disciplined, you have to know your environment. You're not getting caught up of, oh, I need to take this guy, or I have to defend this guy 1v1. I need to be like, he's so locked in and in his mode that he seems perfect for this setup. And then you kind of wonder, well, Ranko is obviously the guy in the middle. That's been very well established at this point. Utvik's, continue to step up. What's he going to do between Laborde and Blackman? Because it feels like that's where the battle is. And that's surprising because who would have seen that coming a few weeks, but it's you can make arguments for both. I'd say based on the basis of the season, I'd lean Laborda, but also Blackman. He has these good moments, these good games, where it's just like really it's for him. It was those lapses against a Portland. It was the some of those minor moments where everything just kind of goes out the window. But for the most part, he's also been very very solid. So yeah, interesting questions now for Vanny to ask of his back three, because I think they're doing, for the most part, again, other than these conceptual errors, as he continues to call them, that crop up. They didn't make any in this game. They keep a clean sheet is good. They're in a very good spot, and it's allowing them to defend well and setting them up nicely for what's to come. So it makes a lot easier when you're not really so worried about what's going on at the back, and then you can focus more on what's going on up front. And yeah, that's I guess what things continue to be more interesting. For what it's worth, sounds like Fafapiko is back in training this week, and having him back will certainly provide a bit of a boost, just because you can kind of see what Vanni Sartini was. He probably the Adekugbe up front. He admitted it was Adekugbe up front. I mean, it was kind of just more off the ball Adekugbe up front, because it was just more like in possession. It was that 3-3-3-1 that the Whitecaps have sometimes played. and when they have wide players on the park, I would, you know, personally, I just haven't found a scenario where the Whitecaps inverting their fullbacks has always worked, but he kind of wanted to go for that bit more of the narrow the field combine, and then that didn't end up being the case. But no, it's nice that, yeah, what's going on at the back opens up the possibility for all the discussions that are happening with what the best mixed is up front.
Yeah, I think given the fact that, ultimately right now it seems like Fafapico being in the lineup is plan A. I think Vanny did a good job being creative there and just, you couldn't start Demir Krylak up front because you knew that Seattle might sit back at times. And I think just the lack of pace, the lack of threat against a conservative block was gonna be a nightmare. So I think Vanny did a good job in that sense, even though there were maybe some things you could look back and say they could have maybe maximized or exploited, especially in that first half. Ultimately, Alex, I mean, do we have any more extensive thoughts about this match? I think that kind of hits the main talking points, the stylistic approach of both teams, the key red cards, the way, I mean, White and Gold on the board again. It's good to see them in the goals and scoring. They're finding some consistency now. It's not just Raposo and Pico, so I think that's good.
Yeah, overall, I think this was just a box ticked performance. Another clean sheet. Boom. White and Gold both score. Boom. Adekugbe gets a goal contribution, gets his confidence up. Boom. The high press looked great. And the moments where they kind of knew how to pick their spots, great. Road win, nice. Like, really, it's hard to say what else you'd want from a game like this. Really, the only, I guess, blemish is that Andres Cubas picks up a yellow card now. That one felt like it was very avoidable. Vanni Certini did explain after the game, Ryan Gold had been getting beat up, other than just the Jackson Reagan red card. There are a few other moments where he kind of got hacked, and he wanted to just protect Ryan Gold, which is fair. I think he's the best. He's your most important piece up front. He's in great form. You want to keep him, but also Kubas is in great form. And I just you look at that schedule, for example. Had he gone to New York, not on a yellow, he gets suspended next week in New York. What's the next game? It's Austin, who's been one of the more poor teams, I guess you could say, in the West. They currently sit. I mean, they're up to eighth, which is wild because it feels like they haven't been the greatest at times this year. You'd rather have him rested at home against an Austin versus on the road against the Red Bulls, where it feels like he'll be crucial. But that's really your lone blemish, and hey, that's just another chance for Sebastian Berhalter to step up. So we'll see how it is. Other than that, yeah, other notes I would just say I thought Pedro Vite looked a lot more comfortable in this game in terms of just his on the ball production. It just seems like this deeper role, you lose a bit more of what he can do in the final third. That's natural. It's not always easy to, be spraying the ball and breaking lines and playing the final pass from deep, but I thought he looked a lot more comfortable in his decision making. At least live in the stadium, I was impressed with what I saw from there. And other than that, like, congrats to Jay Herdman for making his debut. He came in, was lively. It was nice to see him. They were saying some great things about him after. I wonder if we end up seeing him start sign a full-time deal by the end of the year, and he gets really a chance to improve, because that's something where, in terms of long-term options and that those guys you can play higher up the pitch in that kind of Ryan Gold-esque role, it sounds like Jay Herdman's done a lot to kind of impress Vanni Sartini, his staff, and his teammates as someone who could fill in that Cam Habibula role, for example, that seemed to be the idea. And then now, of course, Habibula ends up leaving, goes to KC. Feels like, Antoine Coupland, he's been dealing with some injuries. We haven't heard as much of him as of late. Jay Herdman kind of making a case for that after he returned for himself from some injuries. So I thought a shout out to Herdman was deserved. But yeah, overall, pretty good game for the Whitecaps.
Yeah, big shout out to Jay Herdman. I think it's just great to see, obviously they had kind of the Ahmed and Simon Betcher pipeline. Lavonte Johnson hasn't been seeing the pitch a ton, but you feel like maybe there's something there on the horizon at some point. It's just nice to see the pipeline continuing to produce these opportunities. And it might take a while to come, but just great to see Jay make that first step. And a guy too that I think, one of the reasons why people were speaking so positively is that, He had to come back from a major injury. That was a huge setback to a young career. And I think the way he's worked to get back from it and to push and even kind of take steps forward beyond where he was prior to the injury has really impressed a lot of people around the Whitecaps, whether it's players, coaches, staff. So huge shout out to Jay. Hopefully we see him in the Canadian Championship. Hopefully we see him involved here or there. I know you can only use so many next pro call-ups, so I think that's something that maybe watch out for in terms of that situation. I'm always a bit, I'm learning as I go on the contractual stuff, but I remember our boy Caleb saying something about that on Twitter. So I mean, yeah, without further ado, basically we ready to move on to some Red Bulls preview this weekend. It's the Brian White revenge show, basically.
Yeah, this is Brian White, old club, old stomping
With a
grounds.
chance to break Camilo's regular season goal scoring record as well for club.
Well, that's the big storyline from Brian White's perspective. He's tied with Camilo. If he scores, he's the all-time Whitecaps MLS era top scorer. Pretty cool if he does it at his old club, 50 plus family in attendance. He'll do it from a non-penalty situation because as JJ Adams from the province jokingly asked Ryan Gauld after the game on this weekend, he said, not to look too far ahead, but if Ryan, you're stepping up to take a penalty, Brian White's about to break the record. Do you give it to him? Ryan's like, well, in this scenario, we're going to aim to have Brian already broken the record by then in open play to, because Brian White became one of, what was it, just eight MLS players to score 50 goals without taking a single penalty, let alone, scoring a single penalty. So, yeah, no, huge game for Brian White. But huge game for the Whitecaps. This Red Bulls team, they've definitely been one of the sides that have impressed me the most. Watching them and their record indicates it. 16 points from 9 games. That is currently best in points per game in the East. I'm pretty sure at least it's very close with Miami. Miami's at 1.8 points per game. I think Red Bulls are just above that. So they've pretty much been one of the top dogs out in the East. And pretty much, yeah, they're a top five team in the league right now, along with the Whitecaps. So for all the strength of set schedule, the SOSers for the Whitecaps, this is about as good of a test on the road. Can they get a fourth straight road win this season against a team of this Red Bulls caliber? It's going to be a good matchup, and they've got some fun pieces like Lewis Morgan. He's really been in some great form to start the year. You got Emil Forsberg. He's also really adapted nicely to start the year in MLS. Meanwhile, Dante Van Zier, as well as, finding his teammates, getting a lot of assists to start the year. Otherwise, like, they've got the underlying numbers too. That eye test, fun team to watch, underlying numbers. They're about middle of the pack in terms of expected goals for, but they're just an absolute unit defensively. 0.9 expected goals against. Thanks to that, they have the third best expected goal difference in all of MLS. Whitecaps are around eighth right now. Just to give some context. So this is a kind of a heavyweight matchup that doesn't feel like it's still early in the week. I think we'll see it played up, but this kind of is a heavyweight matchup that could really, too early to talk about the Supporters' Shield race, but it could help determine that. It could help determine what this Whitecaps team actually is, what this Red Bulls team actually is. Like, this is an exciting matchup, and I think this will be a good test for the Whitecaps in a bit of a different environment.
Yeah, I mean, this is takes a very different shape than all their road matchups up until this point, right? You talked about the three bottom teams in the West, and obviously, not to say, yes, Seattle hostile environment, but not exactly a daunting road trip to make, right? Whereas this is across the country, it does take a little bit of a toll. You outlined all the things that have been really good about this New York Red Bulls team so far this year. Van Zier and Morgan up front, one with all the assists, one with all the goals. Emil Forsberg having an impact. They set up, or at least they set up last match in a 4-4-2 shape, pretty no nonsense, but I think just a really solid squad from top to bottom. Something to keep in mind too is like a pretty young team is average age of 25.1. So, they are relying on a couple of vets, but I think elsewhere throughout the roster, it's a pretty young team with some room to grow still, which is especially impressive given their both their defensive record and just like overall quality of play so far. I mean, undefeated in the last five, three draws in the mix, to be fair, and draws the last 2 weekends. I mean, I think, went toe to toe with LAFC, so that's a pretty quality result. And then I believe the week prior, let me just double check, but yeah, it was a nil-nil Chicago Fire, although they did suffer a red card in the 42nd minute. So, not a bad showing there to grind it out and find a way to get some points out of that one. So it's been an impressive team. I look back a little bit further, a 2-1 win over Cincinnati, who other than Columbus, in terms of just kind of year-to-year continuity and quality within the roster in the Eastern Conference, Cincinnati's got to be one of those top teams. They also blew out Inter Miami 4-0. That was all the way back on May 23rd. So if that's something you care about, then and put value in, then that's something you can hold on to. Really, like looking through the results, it's okay, suffered another red card and lost 3-0 to Columbus. That's like the one big disappointing result that this team has had. Otherwise, it's been pretty bulletproof so far this year. So this is a serious challenge for the Whitecaps, just like the Galaxy were 2 weekends ago. And I have to think, if you're Vancouver, you're kind of licking your lips, shaking your, putting your hands together, because you want an opportunity to, more than just erase that Galaxy defeat, but really like stamp some authority on we're a real, like, this is, if the Whitecaps are able to win this 2-0, 3-1, this is a true announcement, I think, to the league that the Whitecaps are a contender this year in the West. That's kind of what it could have, because at the moment, I think it's like, oh, the Whitecaps are off to a great start, and there's a lot to like about this team, but probably not getting that respect in terms of the league-wide circles. I mean, shout out to Tom Bogert, who does great content on YouTube now that I really enjoy. But he did, I think it was maybe like 2 weeks ago, which team would you rather be? And the choice was between the Vancouver Whitecaps and the New York Red Bulls. And Tom said, yeah, I think at this point I'd rather be the New York Red Bulls. Okay, Vancouver Whitecaps, here's your opportunity. Go get it. I feel like that's kind of the tone this week. This is LA Galaxy East, not in terms of play style, I'm just to be very, very clear, but in terms of like the quality of their start and the level of competency within the league, the level of standing. So this is another chance to really test yourself against a top team and maybe show that, the Whitecaps want to show they belong amongst this group right at the top of the table. And this is just a big chance to do it against a team that I think has been super impressive so far this year.
Yeah, the Red Bulls are a little bit defensive, better defensively than the Galaxy, just a little, maybe a lot. But yeah, no, it's one where, yeah, I think if you're for the Whitecaps, it was bulletin board material game. Think about it. 4:30 PST kick. It's prime time for those out east. I'm sure it'll be a very match that MLS 360 will be focusing a lot of time on. This is like, we always see it, we joke sometimes with the Canucks, right? When they play the Leafs on those 4:30 games, like, oh, this is the time everyone's watching, right? You can always make those arguments of, oh, the Whitecaps have been winning all these games, but it's the 7:30 kicks, no one out east is watching, yada yada yada. Although I must say, having lived a couple years out east, I actually love those 10:30 kickoffs. I guess they were out east. So if you're not taking advantage of that, what are you doing, people out east? Take advantage of that opportunity. But no, I think it's this is that's it. It's the prime time. It's two top teams. People were keeping a close eye on it. And I think this will set a statement of, oh, you went and beat the Red Bulls in their own patch of grass. Prime time. People are watching. Okay, like this means something. So this is really a chance to amend for the Galaxy game. They played, as we mentioned, on the day. They weren't bad against the Galaxy. They just kind of got hurt by little errors. Don't make those same errors for the most part. What's been nice across the Whitecaps, there hasn't really been a game where you're like, oh, that was a real stinker of a performance. Like, for the most part, even in their losses, it was more like, all right, you did a lot of good things. It was individual errors. Keep those on the low in this game, execute, keep being consistent, and maybe they'll be due a result after how unlucky, I guess you could say, they were against the Galaxy, right? Sometimes you give and sometimes you take. Just continue to put yourself in the circumstances that you end up giving, or you end up, I guess, taking a lot more than you end up giving, as can sometimes be the case in MLS. So, no, definitely a very interesting game here against the Red Bulls. Definitely one to keep an eye on and tuck into if you have the opportunity, because it does feel like one where we'll really learn a lot about this what this Whitecaps sign, or at least maybe not us. I feel like now as you're approaching what 8 games of watching this Whitecaps team, it is now up to they've now played 8. You're starting to get, what is it? Usually they say 10 games is where you can really start to see what trends are there about a team and what they're really all about. But this is one for maybe a bit more of the external people to be like, all right, what is this Whitecaps team all about? But yeah, really, I don't really have much else to say about this Red Bulls team. Pretty straightforward. Keep an eye on Forsberg between the lines. Every time I watch Red Bulls games, he gets on the ball a lot and will kind of orchestrate notes for the Whitecaps, right? No, Andres Cubas, that's someone who you'd think would love a matchup like that. Gonna be very curious to see what they do defensively to compensate. Sebastian Berhalter is very fresh. As I mentioned last show, I wondered if he would start. Pedro Vite stepped up, did well. Berhalter came off the bench. I imagine that'll be your pivot for this game. Don't think Ralf Priest will be thrust in with a first start in this kind of game quite yet. But I guess on that note, do you want to kind of go over your lineups and then roll out a score prediction? I think we both had draws for the Whitecaps last game, but I did mention I wouldn't be surprised to see the Whitecaps win, and they did. Of course, that's not a bold take or anything like that, but I'd say we did okay with some of our prognostics, at least in terms of score, less so in terms of lineups. I also threw out guys like Luis Martins and Jermaine Brown, which didn't end up being the case.
Yeah, I thought it was primed for maybe a Javain start, but didn't see Sam Adekubi again. I think playing up front is like maybe a bit misleading, but people were freaking out when they saw the lineup card. And I was like, guys, calm down. He's not
It's just
playing, and
off the
he's
ball.
not playing as a winger. Don't worry.
Well, actually, that's a PSA. Vanni Sartini did say early in the season when he had his like media roundtable thing, he said, "This is just something to know. Remember, the lineup is always how the Whitecaps defend. How they attack will always look very different to how they defend." So I think that's something that's important to remember, that if you see some ludicrous things like we've seen over the last few years, like Adekubi as a winger, what are some other ones we've seen that have thrown us for a loop? Like it just means that's where they defend. If that makes like shopped at a wing back, all that sort of stuff.
Exactly. So yeah, anyways, we made some interesting proclamations last weekend and maybe didn't quite work out, but okay, for this one, I mean the I guess my question is you tap Seb Berhalter as a guy to start in Kubas's absence. I guess I wonder if Alessandro Schopf just tucks back into a central role and they start Adekubi in. I guess Adekubi on travel. It is on grass. What do you think what's the temperature there in terms of Adekubi starting again? Obviously, I think with an eye on taking him out in like the 60th minute or something like that.
I think Adekubi starts, because I asked Sartini about Adekubi after the game. It was more just about his performance, but he was kind of joking that Adekubi was on a strict 60-minute limit in that game, and he was kind of laughing. He laughed. He's like, "So we're very happy he chose the 58th minute or whatever it was to make his assist, so then he could just be like, well, at least we're taking you off on a high, as much as it'd be tempting to keep him in after that." But I imagine, as I talked about last week, I thought he wasn't going to start because they're going to keep him, but they obviously have this trajectory plan where it's growing each week. So I think he might be good for 75 this week, especially on grass. There's no midweek Canadian Championship to deal with. Relatively straightforward training schedule. I could see that it could be started.
Okay, so I'll go into my lineup then. Joje Takaoka in goal. Now the back three is interesting. I guess there's two options. Well, there's multiple options, right? There's keep the back line the exact same way. There's bring Laborda back in, but take Blackman out and keep Utvik. Or there's take Utvik out and go back to Veselinovic, Blackman, and Laborda. I feel like they might just run it back with the same back line. I would maybe like to see them slot in Laborda and take out Blackman, but keep Utvik. But I feel like they might just run back the same back three. Then going to the midfield, I think, at least in my projected lineup, I'm going to tuck Alessandro Schopf into the middle and do Vite and Schopf as your midfield pivot. with Adekubi and Ahmed in those wide roles. This is kind of assuming that Fafa Pico is going to be okay to play and to start. It sounds like it's obviously an injury that needed recovery, but hopefully he'd be able to, you know, if he gets a full week of training and there's maybe some positive signs there. So then Fafa Pico, Brian White, Ryan Gault up front. That's kind of one way I could see it going down. But obviously, I think across the midfield and the back line up front, there's a question at each of those spots.
I'd say it goes a little more straightforward this week than usual, than what I, at least in last week. I think you're right on some of those discussions. So I'd go Taco can go. I think for the back three, I think you keep Ludvík in because you've played three games the last 3 weeks. You've kept two clean sheets. Guess which two games Ludvík played?
He's been good. I don't see why you would take him out. It's more of a question of who's that third guy.
So that's it. I think you definitely reward Ludvík. Ranko sticks in. I think they'll run it back, but I could see a scenario where you put Laborda in. Just keep the rotation. Screw it. Get that competition. But I think, yeah, based on the fact you're off a clean sheet last time you changed the lineup after a clean sheet, you ended up eating three. I think you'll see Blackman, Veselinovic, Utvik, which is harsh on Laborda, but you know, as soon as he'll get tapped on, he'll come out strong. And again, that's the beauty that we mentioned of Vanni Sartini earlier, that he has a problem in the sense that he has too many guys to pick from at back three, but that's huge because he didn't have that problem this year. It's a good problem, as he'll tell. I think for the midfield four, I think what we'll see is we'll see Adekugbe at one of the wingback positions, Schöpf at the other, Vitai Berhalter, just because I think with no Kubas, they go for a bit more of that solidity in midfield to. You know, I think the Red Bulls are pretty, they've got some pretty good options in midfield. You don't want to get too overwhelmed, too stretched out. I think having that Schöpf tuck in on the ball as he does, I think will help because the Red Bulls have been playing a 4-4-2, interestingly enough. But, you know, it's very fluid. Like the guy, Forsberg's always cutting inside. You know, Van Zier's kind of got a free role. Lewis Morgan, too, isn't really a traditional nine. So it's 4-4-2, they'll defend in that way. And I think having a Schöpf as an extra body will only help. And then I think because of that, they go Gold, White, Ahmed. I think you keep Pico for a super sub. Back spasms, no reason to push something like that. Have him come off the bench. And in a game like this, it feels like the Whitecaps on the road. They might have to do a bit more defending, but that's fine. You can let the guys they have out there do that job, and then you maybe Pico against tired legs can kind of be the move to go for in the second half. So I'd say no reason to push him with how good he's been. But yeah, that's probably the only tweaks I'd have from your lineup.
Yeah, I like it. I feel like the base is obviously going to be consistent. There's a lot of predictability within this lineup, which is good. It's just those little pieces, those tweaks from week to week. So we'll see exactly how they set up. I mean, yeah, the Red Bull's kind of a tough opponent in the sense it feels like they do everything pretty well. So there isn't like one overwhelming strength or one overwhelming weakness to set your lineup against. So it'll be a good challenge for Vanni Sartini. Okay, now on to result. You know, I feel like I've been quite cautious in my road predictions so far. And I think, you know, winning on the road is tough in MLS. And so you have to respect that. But it feels like the Whitecaps have found some swagger and some confidence. So I'm gonna say that they keep the good times rolling and they get a classic 2-1 victory out on the East Coast. I think, you know, no time like the present to kind of grab onto some of this momentum and you know, the little bit of emotion with the Brian White return, and maybe he's able to find a record-setting goal. And just, you know, I think maybe people are underrating. Yes, there were two red cards, but I think it was a good performance last weekend against Seattle. So maybe they're able to ride that and yeah, come back to BC Place with a lot of momentum.
That's a good question. I think they should match up decently against the Red Bulls. I do wonder how the Red Bulls are going to set up because they're so good defensively. If they sit a bit deeper, the Whitecaps continue to struggle against that. That's one thing that if you are going to nitpick anything from Seattle, I didn't see a whole lot from when in breaking down the low blocks. They kind of thrived in pressing. Interesting enough, the Whitecaps are on a four-game winless streak against the Red Bulls. They haven't won against them since 2015 because they never play them. I'll go 1-1 draw. I think just this scenario, the Whitecaps continue to be good on the road. This road point would be good. You're playing an Eastern Conference team. You want points against those kinds of teams. I can, again, it's one of those where it's like against Seattle, I could very well see the win. I could also very well see the loss. This one feels a bit more open in terms of the variability. And it's not so much because of the Whitecaps, it's because of the Red Bulls. Like at the end of the day, this is that you're on the road in MLS. You're playing a good Red Bulls team. It's cross country. This could be a tough game for the Whitecaps, and it could be a bit of a come down to earth. But I think I like the mentality of the group and how they'll respond. So I'd go 1-1 draw, but who knows? I think I like the call of going for a 2-1 win on your side because I think that's something this group could very well do to kind of send a message of, yeah, this is what we're about. This is what we do, and no better game to do it than this one, which I definitely think it'll feel close.
I mean, this is one of these ones where it's obviously way too early in the season to take too much out of a result, but I feel like this is one where if they go and win, it might portend well to what they can do big picture this season, right? Like it's one thing to have a bit of early season success and look good, but if you can go and get this win, I think it kind of bumps you into another tier. So it's a big opportunity. I think your point is a good one that, the Red Bulls aren't necessarily going to give you those two layups that the Sounders provided last week, right? So you're going to have to beat their structure. You're going to have to beat their defensive quality, because I mean, we talked about the Sounders had good underlying defensive numbers going into the match, and really didn't live up to that potential. So Vancouver will have to be poised to capitalize if they get the chance, or otherwise find a way to break it down through some moments of quality.
Yeah, and that's something to watch. My last point is that when I've watched the Red Bulls, they're good at when the game gets open. They got some good transitional pieces, especially in wide areas that can get back, shut things down. And that's what we mentioned. That's been the Whitecaps' strength in the attack is when the games get open, attacking that space. So that's it. Will they be able to expose the Red Bulls and find the spaces that other teams have? Well, the underlying numbers suggest that the Red Bulls don't mind that sort of game. So yeah, again, I'll come down to what kind of version of gold and whatnot will you get in terms of breaking the low block? But either way, promises to be an interesting one. Make sure to tune in because, yeah, this feels like such an exciting matchup, right? To be thinking early supporter shield race games. Again, who would have seen that coming a few months ago? Not everyone, that's for sure, especially that poor guy. I'm going to keep catching, giving him strays. I don't even remember who it was. Whoever predicted the Whitecaps would finish last in the West, he certainly didn't see this one coming. So shout out to that. But no, jokes aside, last bit of Whitecaps news, at least in terms of the MLS team. We do have some more Whitecaps news at the end of the show, I will mention. But in terms of the first team men's team news, there's some signings, as I mentioned this week, which kind of, again, threw me completely off guard because I was like, oh yeah, transfer window. Like, this is more just like, yeah, so random. But the Whitecaps have brought in a new addition, and it's at wing back. So that's very interesting because it's something we mentioned where it does feel like the Whitecaps could use a bit more depth at wing back. And they've brought in an intriguing name, 19-year-old, super young, Giuseppe Bovalina. He is not Italian, though. He's Australian. He's a Socceroo, as they like to say. He comes from Adelaide United FC. Thankfully, that was one where I saw him like, oh, okay, that's good because our resident, I guess you can call him the third sub scout, third sub expert on player evaluation. He just happens to be someone who keeps a close eye on the A-League. So I'm excited to read his full evaluation of the signing. But even from Twitter, he was like, okay, interesting. Said some good things. And he also said, look, to be honest, he hasn't seen that whole much. But usually when you're playing pro soccer, you end up playing over 18 or 1700 minutes last year for Adelaide as a wing back at a level like that. Usually it means you're doing something pretty well. So yeah, I mean, look, Sam, I guess I don't know if you have any initial thoughts on the move, what it means for the Whitecaps, 19-year-old wingback international, before I dive into some of the underlying numbers that were out there.
Sure. Yeah, this is where I tell you that I've watched all 1700 of his minutes from last year and have an in-depth breakdown. No, but I think this adds to the trend of the Vancouver Whitecaps making some like shrewd buy low and see if the stock rises type acquisitions, right? Like, as Caleb said, playing so many senior minutes at a young age, usually a sign of something. And, even it sounds like from the good work that our friends Harjeet Johal and JJ Adams did chatting with Axel Schuster, they view this as a project as well, right? Like, this is not a guy that's going to come in and provide starting level MLS minutes right away, but that's totally fine for the price they paid to acquire him, for the spot he'll fill in the roster. It doesn't need to all happen at once. And I think there's obviously they see potential for starting MLS quality somewhere down the line. So yeah, I have pretty high faith in this recruitment group that they've showed the ability to make good acquisitions on this front. And yeah, just kind of adding to the there's obviously a bunch of guys at Next Pro who are maybe a little further away from contributing than this guy, but they're just adding to the armory of these kind of underrated or untapped youngsters that maybe have something to give at some point at the first team level. So hard to really find anything to complain about that.
Yeah, it's depth at the end of the day. This isn't someone coming in to, I guess, alter the prospects of the team. I mean, the one good point that I do see is why not promote from within at this point? But also I think there's some upside in there, and that to play at that level in Australia, that many games as a youngster, there is that upside. And I think it's something that it does feel like the Whitecaps too, at least from what I've seen. They're not the most loaded at wing back. Of course, there's Gerasimenkov, but he's a left wing back, or more of a left-sided player.
Also, this is Vanny's favorite position on the whole roster. Like, he wants as many of these wide players as he can get, as not wide players in like the 4-4-3 winger sense, but in the kind of transitional threat, right? He wants as many of these guys as he can get his hands on. And overall, in terms of organizational depth, I don't feel like they have as many as they want given the way they play. So I don't mind that, I don't feel like Gerasimenkov is now running out of room. Like, there's still a lot of room for this position on the first team, on the second team. I feel like that's not, at least on my from my perspective, not a huge concern.
No, 100%. And look, you don't give Vanni Certini wingbacks. He will try to turn anything that he has in his he can get his hands on into a wingback, like Alessandro Schopf, to good success, and other projects not so much. So sometimes it is nice to maybe scratch that itch, so to speak, and give him some wingbacks to natural wingbacks to work with. But no, jokes aside, he's got an interesting profile. That was one thing I did pull up. Again, it's his data. I'm not going to pretend like I've seen a whole lot of if at all. Maybe I have tucked into an A-League game where I accidentally saw Bovolina play, but at least his underlying numbers always tell you something. Because what was the old saying that I always love, is that humans lie, numbers don't. Maybe humans exaggerate, or maybe numbers exaggerate, but it is fair. It's data. But yeah, he played and ended up playing 1,773 minutes in the A-League last year for Adelaide United. Very impressive for someone of his age. He ended up scoring a goal and adding two assists, at least per the Y-Scout data. I know that sometimes varies slightly from other platforms. What I found interesting is that he had 0.05 goals per 90. He had 0.18 expected goals per 90. So he's actually really involved offensively and was doing a good job. I was looking at some of his like game by game numbers. He finished the year pretty much, he was guaranteed to get a pretty good opportunity or two per game, like 0.17 XG, 0.31, 0.12. Like, someone who indicates that he's getting forward and shooting the ball. He's averaging 1.57 shots a game, which is not bad at all for a wing back, or per 90, sorry. Decent passer, 81%, a bit lower, but naturally when you play a higher up the pitch, you miss more passes than if you were a center back, say. So that's nothing that stood out. Doesn't dribble that much, only 1.83 dribbles a game, which I think that's something that Vanny probably likes. He likes his wing backs to arrive in the box and be some of those final action sort of pieces. So that was something that was that stood out. Otherwise, his assist numbers are also something that kind of impressed. He has 0.1 assists per 90, but he had 0.13 expected assists. So he was underperforming his expected assists. It indicates he gets into good areas. He's averaging 2.4 crosses a game, averaging 4.87 penalty passes into in the final third, 2.23 passes into the box. It looks like he's getting the ball into the dangerous areas, and that's ultimately the big thing that stood out. Someone that's getting into the right areas with his goals and his assists, and that's what you want from attacking wingback. So overall, some intriguing underlying numbers on the attacking side. Defensively, he wins a lot of defensive duels. Not the strongest aerially. That's a wingback. That's okay. Yes, a lot of interceptions. That's encouraging. So overall, it just seemed like a solid project when you consider this is a 19-year-old playing that many minutes in a top flight league.
Yeah, no, those again, I think just, playing so many minutes in a top flight league at that age, and then, as you outlined, producing some pretty good numbers to go along with it. I think just being able to contribute at that age, at that level, is a really positive sign. And I think this is someone that there's probably still a lot of work to be done with Anni Sartini to kind of get his hands on him and help mold him into the player that the Whitecaps might want, and ultimately, whatever he can kind of produce at his highest level. So one to kind of watch out for down the line here, maybe get some next pro action, some seasoning the rest of the season, and we'll watch out and see how it goes. So yeah, continue to be fun to watch that next pro team, although I'd like to see them it's too bad they couldn't get on the score sheet this past weekend against Tacoma. That was a low event, nil-nil affair there. But Alex, now that's kind of the prescient Whitecaps news that we've been able to deal with. Now to around MLS in 5 or so minutes, there were some really wild Western Conference matchups this past weekend. I think highlighted by the one on Sunday, the Cali Classico. For a moment there, it looked like maybe the Vancouver Whitecaps were going to get their wish and San Jose was going to storm all the way back and steal this one. But goals, red card, just sloppy but high event, exciting football all around. I mean, I don't know if you're an LA Galaxy player or if you're an LA Galaxy supporter. I don't know how you sustain this for an entire season. It just feels. You'd be absolutely wired every match day, but that was the one in particular that just really stood out to me. But Ricky Puig, Joseph Pantsil, Gabriel Peck, they're doing more of the same offensively, finding a way to contribute. So for every brutal defensive moment for the Galaxy, they find a way to score a goal to even it up.
Well, it's run and gun. I think it's the term they used to use back in the 80s to describe that sort of high octane offense combined with what do we want to call it? Just optional defending, I guess, where you're not always locked in. But that's the strength and that's the weakness of this Galaxy team. Those killer peas, as they're being called now, the killer peas is the nickname going around in the Galaxy land. Peck, Puig, Paintsill, they're three DPs. That was the first game they all scored separately. That offense is lethal, and that gives them a chance where even if you have a red card, you give away some goals, you end up turning a 4-1 game into a 4-3 game. You still got the offensive firepower to come through it in the end. And so it's going to be interesting to see as the games get tighter, because that's always the question of, oh, when the playoff games, the big games, there's not always room for that sort of high scoring soccer. I'll be interested to see how they answer, but that's the Galaxy for you. But yeah, it's funny to see the sort of start that they've had. And on a similar note, another team I want to keep that I kept an eye on, at least it was on in the press box when I arrived in Seattle, St. Louis, Kansas. I mean, we highlighted that one. It was a we called it, El Barbecuo or some nonsensical name like that. But when I think of St. Louis, I just think of that meme where it's just like, why can't you be normal? It's because, like, can these guys ever play a normal game of soccer? I feel like I've watched them 3 or 4 times this year, and it's always been like 3-3, 4-3, 4-4. It's like, you know, 1-0s are okay, right? Like, it's not, there's no rule that says if you draw 1-1, 0-0, or you win 1-0, it means less than if you win 3-3 2 or 4-3 or draw 4-4, but it just makes their games fun. So it was funny that there was a goal, and I think someone went up 3-2. I think it would have been Kansas, I think, went up 3-2, and I was just like, this game's not over. This game has another goal in it, and surely St. Louis scores 92nd minute to tie and get a draw. So yeah, that one's another chaotic one, and it's funny to see that there's so many high octane chaotic teams like St. Louis Galaxy in the West, whereas the Whitecaps have kind of have found their success by chilling things out, being a little more low event defensively. It feels like not everyone has got that memo in the Western Conference.
No, absolutely. I don't think that memo has been well received throughout the rest of the Western Conference. I mean, it is truly, I know the discourse going into the season a little bit was, oh, like the East has most of the quality and the West is wide open. But it has kind of been living up to that so far. I mean, we saw Minnesota streaking early and then they struggled, and now Minnesota's back to winning ways. Colorado off to a bad start. Now they're really rolling. RSL, I mean, Chicho Arango just keeps finding the back of the net. They seem to be cruising. I think that win over the Vancouver Whitecaps probably kind of kick started their success. So I think it's going to be an up and down year throughout the Western Conference. That just kind of seems like the way this season is going. And what that means is that every weekend, certainly when there's these inter-Western Conference matchups, there's some exciting football to watch.
Yeah, it feels like the end of the Supporters' Shield race will be about 7 or 8 teams, and I bet you 5 or 6 of them will be from the East again. So for the Whitecaps, if you want to be a top Western team, keep winning those Western Conference matchups. And that's again why this Eastern Conference matchup is so interesting. It feels like with the quality in the East, this will be a really good test. 'Cause it feels like between Columbus, Cincinnati, Red Bulls, and Philadelphia, those are pretty four strong early candidates that you'd say are some of the, and Inter Miami. How could I forget Inter Miami? And even again, of course, TFC still sitting in fifth. They're lurking. They're picking up points, which could pay off for them down the road. I don't know. I'm bullish on Atlanta. Every time I've watched them this year, they've got some good pieces. Giakoumakis is such a lethal nine. Almada, of course, one of the best players in the league on his day. Like that the East is really feels like there's a bit more stability there, where again a question really remains. Like everyone kind of has the question marks in the West, because it's the Galaxy, all right, they can score like in nobody's business, but the defense, the Whitecaps, all right, can they do it against top teams? Is there enough overall top end quality? Those are some of the questions being asked of them. RSL, they've probably been the most impressive of the bunch, but even then you look at that RSL team. There's just something where it doesn't feel like they've got all of the consistency to keep pushing, but they've shown it so far. Colorado, still some questions. Minnesota, really the two top teams at the moment, in my opinion, based on what I've seen, it's RSL and Houston. Even then, you're looking at two. You compare that to Columbus, Cincinnati, Red Bulls. Like, I just have so many more questions about what's going on in the West. So yeah, I think it makes it interesting and shows the importance of the Whitecaps just banking all these early points and finding their confidence, because they still feel like they, for as good as they've been, they have another gear to hit and another place to go find as they push up the Supporters' Shield standings.
No, exactly. It signals a huge opportunity for Vancouver. As I said, kind of outlining what's on the table this weekend, that it's not just kind of stating your case league-wide. It's also because this Western Conference is so wide open. It's definitely there for the taking. Looking ahead to this weekend, just in terms of matchups that maybe stood out to us, I mean, there's a lot of interconference stuff, so that always creates some weird ones that maybe you're not like super hyped for, you know, like as much as Cincinnati and Colorado, those are two good teams. I'm not sure that I'm like massively getting excited for that one. In terms of rivalry games or stuff to watch out for, I mean, I think Columbus Montreal has some very interesting storylines in terms of the coaching staff and you know, where those two teams have been over the last couple seasons. LAFC Portland after the Max Crapo red card. There's a chance for revenge there immediately. So I think that could be interesting. That one's the nightcap on Saturday. And then, I mean, Minnesota Sporting KC as well. You know, so there are some interconference matchups amidst some weird interconference ones like DC United, Seattle Sounders, and stuff of that nature. So yeah, I mean, for me, LAFC, Portland. Oh, I forgot. Philadelphia, Real Salt Lake. Speaking of interconference matchups, and that is one for the neutral that's maybe worth watching with RSL playing as well as they have been. And Philadelphia, they're the only undefeated team in MLS, but it feels like they haven't even really hit full stride yet. So that's an interesting test for both of them as well this weekend. So a couple things that kind of popped out to me.
Yeah, it feels like the interconference matchups are more tasty, and maybe this is good for the West because, hey, maybe on paper the East looks better, but there's the best way for the West to prove that, hey, West is best is to, get some wins in these interconference matchups. So I think it's interesting. There's some grudge matches in the sense of Red Bulls Vancouver. That's a big test for Vancouver. Philly RSL, that's another top end test. Even like a Nashville San Jose, I feel like something where San Jose again just feels like every week, like, can they just finally get their season back on track and get some wins? So no, definitely Cincinnati, Colorado, that's a big one for Colorado. That's a massive test that will give them idea of what their strong start going up a team like Cincinnati. So no, I'm really interested in those interconference ones because like Galaxy, they're playing Austin. I think that's one where it's on the road. I think this Galaxy team's in such good form that I think they probably take care of business there. Otherwise, in the West, Minnesota Sporting KC, that should be good clash, good matchup. It's like, all right, not something that stands out in a big way. LAFC Portland, again, shout out to the schedule makers. We've already seen this one recently, so cool, I guess. So yeah, it's definitely one where I'm a bit more intrigued by these interconference matchups than I are the other ones.
Yeah, absolutely. Those will be good to watch out for this weekend. Looking forward to that action. And that kind of caps off at least what we saw in MLS this past weekend, what we're looking forward to this weekend outside of the Vancouver Whitecaps and the New York Red Bulls. Okay, Alex, Canadian Premier League time. We were in attendance at some matches this weekend. I mean, me just the singular match, but you as we chronicled on the last show, a whole litany of live football, but in particular, two of the Canadian Premier League variety, Vancouver FC, their big win over Halifax Wanderers, and then Pacific with a win over Valor. Both teams going a perfect 6 of 6 points at the top of the Canadian Premier League table. I guess we could start with this question, Alex. Who's been the more impressive perfect start of the two BC Canadian Premier League sides in your eyes? Is it Vancouver, who, obviously they're in the second year after being an expansion side and there's still a lot to prove, but then with Pacific losing some of their biggest players, some fracturing within the roster, big questions coming into the season. I think both have really stepped up to the challenge, at least in terms of league play. So yeah, curious for your thoughts on who's maybe impressed most so far.
Funny, so it's a tough question because, like, in terms of sample size, this is perfect because they both played at home, they both played the same team, so you can pretty much just compare, like, oh, well, you can't be like, oh, well, this team played this terrible team, and that's this team didn't. No, they played the exact same opponents, both home. It just depends on what you value because Vancouver's been so electric offensively, like, and fun to watch, fluid. They got such. Like it's something to behold when all their pieces click and they get guys running into space, Moses Dyer, Alejandro Diaz playing off each other, Bitar doing his thing, Kentave coming off the bench. So that's kind of been the fascination on that side. But then for Pacifics, the defense, back-to-back clean sheets, Emil Gazdov taking a step forward, locking it down at the back. It really just depends on what you value. So I'd probably say Vancouver FC would be the more impressive just because, that offense, those goals, the way they've been clicking, and while also still being solid defensively, it feels like Vancouver's been a bit more comfortable in both of their games, where Pacific did have some shaky moments in the first half against Valor. But I think Pacific's defensive work is key because when we were doing the preview at the earlier this season for CPL, what we mentioned for Pacific was, okay, That's a solid team in the middle. That Sean Young made his 100th appearance this past weekend, scored a goal, was a man of the match. They've got some great pieces in the middle, even with Manny Aparicio gone. It's what happens up front, what happens in goal. Well, Emil Gazdov's been excellent in goal. So that's something where it's a huge uptick. That's the sort of performance you want to see in growth from the youngster. And then up front, Rion Moore. I continue to like what I see from him. It's funny, he hasn't scored a goal yet, but he won the penalty in game one. He gets an assist in this game. He's annoying to play against. I like what I see there from Rion Moore. So definitely nothing to take away from Pacific, even though if we're talking which one's been more impressive, it's probably the one where just the goals, the offensive and high flying ways of the Eagles.
Yeah, I think that's a fair evaluation, really. Getting it done in different ways. I think, Pacific just kind of showing their mettle and their and also I think the back line has been, especially some of the young players they've brought into that back line, have been really impressive so far. But then obviously for Vancouver, the variety of attack, I thought also just in terms of that match against Halifax, the way they were able to show some tactical versatility. Like you might have thought after that Valor match that it's just going to be all out attack all season long, and they're not going to be able to frustrate and sort of lock things down. And they were just able to give Halifax so many problems in the midfield. Just the Wanderers couldn't get into the little possession patterns they wanted to because of the intensity of the way the Eagles were hassling them, and they just really took all the steam out of the match, which I thought was at least for the visitors, which I thought was really impressive. And Ashton Gottlieb's done a really, really, really good job so far. I think using the tools at his disposal and playing the same starting 11 those first two matches, but playing two pretty different styles of football with that same starting 11, at least in terms of how they sort of matched up against those opponents. So I was super impressed by that. Ultimately, I mean, certainly when you look at Valor, you can kind of see both of these BC teams and go, okay, those are wins you expect those teams to come out with. But and Halifax has obviously struggled a little bit on the road and certainly struggled in BC to pick up points. So kind of like the Vancouver Whitecaps early in the season, I think the true test and the more sustainable test will come with these teams, taking their talents elsewhere and testing just how far they can go with the game that they've been able to show through the first two matches of Canadian Premier League play. And Alex, we kind of saw that already in the Canadian Championship last night, which was Tuesday night. As we mentioned off the top, another tough one for Vancouver because it was right there for the taking, especially with the red card. And then things just kind of, it was right there in their grasp and it slipped through. And, full credit to Cavalry really showing what a veteran group they are, how composed they are. They were able to handle that big moment in the match and still come out on top and progress to the next round.
Yeah, no, I guess yeah, a lot to unpack there. I just one final note on the VFC Halifax. VFC have a winning record against Halifax. 3 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss. They had a winning record last year. What I find interesting, and they did it again, that Vancouver loved to man mark Caligari, which not a lot of teams around the league do, which is interesting because it feels like counterintuitive to man mark someone who's so good in possession like Caligari. But that maybe sometimes it's unconventional, especially in a world of zones and space, covering space to take one guy out. But when that one guy is such a key piece of a team's buildup, it can work sometimes. And I think Vancouver's caught Halifax by surprise. I thought that was interesting, and something that continues to be intriguing with this Vancouver FC side. Some of those different tactical wrinkles they'll throw that are kind of like, okay, it's a bit different. Like going for a 4-2-2-2 formation, but it gets so much fluidity in the attack that you're like, oh, okay. It's not top heavy like you can see sometimes when teams play four up front. It's not always the most fluid setup, but for BFC, they're making it work. But yes, the Canadian Championship game. We'll focus on that. It's obviously it was a big one for the Whitecaps. They're keeping an eye on who their prospective quarterfinal opponent would be across 2 legs. Would it be Vancouver FC first time, the Vancouver Derby? To be named Derby. Guess we'll wait another year since they're not going to play each other, at least unless something completely wild happens. Instead, you get cavalry, and that one will certainly mean a lot for the Whitecaps. They, of course, played cavalry the first time, 2019, home and away. Ended up drawing leg one, losing leg two, famously eliminated by cavalry. And then in 2022, they got their revenge, but it wasn't easy. A 1-1 draw on the road after a late equalizer. They went on to penalties. So this is, they have got history. But yeah, in this game itself, I think the big kind of takeaway that I saw watching is if you're Vancouver, you have to be frustrated with how things went, because on the road against a good cavalry team, it was pretty even most of the way. Ali Moussi had a massive chance when it was nil-nil. Callum Irving made a big save. And then at the other end, Moses Dyer had a huge chance when it was nil-nil. Carducci, who ended up being probably my least, he was this CanPL.ca's player of the match, probably would have been mine as well. He ended up making a huge save. It was even, it was there. It was like, okay, who's going to get that next big chance? Cavalry gets the red card. Shamit Shome, sloppy on a yellow. Takes out Vasco Fry. Charlie Trafford could have very easily been sent off a few minutes earlier for a similar infraction, already on a yellow. He went right through someone on VFC. I think it would have been James Cameron, it might have been. But red card, like, oh, this is it. Vancouver can take momentum, and they just completely lost their head. That's really the only way to put it. But despite being up a man, they started hoofing everything long. They couldn't string together more than three, four passes. I don't know if it was just the excitement of, oh, we're up a man, we got Calvary right where we want them, let's go for the kill. It just felt like they didn't need to rush. But when you're going up against 10 men, especially when it happens around 65, 60, as it did, you've got half an hour to beat them down. You don't have to go for the kill right away. Tire them out. That's the beauty of 10 men. And it felt like they just kind of got overwhelmed, and Calvary decided to go, screw it, we're down 10 men, this is the time to push. Our legs are still fresh. We'll field them in 2030. They went for it. And they're kind of rewarded for that risk, that boldness. They were all over VFC for the 5 minutes even before the goal. And then Tobias Warshawski, just a pure dog goal. If you haven't seen it, he just back post, three guys on him. He just wanted it more, jumps up, heads it in. And Vancouver just couldn't push. And that was something to keep, that's something to keep an eye on. Because in the first two games, we did see them trail against Valor, but they corrected that very quickly. You haven't really seen them chase very much of any game so far this year, and they did in this one. And the Cavalry just frustrated them, stifled them. Defensive masterclass, I must say, from Cavalry. And unfortunately for VFC, that meant that they missed their golden date with destiny with the Whitecaps, and instead it's Cavalry getting a third crack at the team in blue and white from Vancouver.
Yeah, it felt to me like in a lot of ways, Cavalry after the red card were able to do what VFC did to the Wanderers so well, which was just expose that eagerness and that kind of desire to get into the kind of football they wanted to play. They were able to just take that eagerness and flip it and turn it against them and really frustrate Vancouver. And I think going and playing in a hostile environment too, that's as much as the Eagles have talked about their improved maturity and the veterans they have on the roster, I think it's a lot easier to play as a front runner and a lot easier to play in front of home support. And all it takes is one moment to really flip the match in its head, right? And as much as the red card maybe should have been that moment, ultimately it was going behind that I think really became that turning point where Vancouver didn't allow themselves the opportunity to be patient with that numerical advantage and just like wait for the right moment to pounce. And that's something that you have to learn by being in these situations, right? And I think becoming a better team, becoming more of a serious contender, whether it's in the Canadian Championship or just in the Canadian Premier League, they're going to learn these kinds of things along the way that, they have the quality to be patient. You don't have to go out and get that goal right away. And I think they're ultimately, disappointing in the short term for this Vancouver FC team, but maybe not a terrible thing that they get to focus on the Canadian Premier League season. I mean, you probably don't fancy either of these CPL opponents against the Whitecaps in the next round. I mean, put that on a bulletin board and we'll see if we're maybe proven wrong. Ultimately, I think, a good early season challenge for these Eagles who have been really impressive so far for the most part.
Yeah, I think it's you can see it two of different ways, because there is the view of, One less competition to worry about, one where you probably weren't going to make a run anyways, because this Whitecaps team is pretty much favorites against anyone right now. So that's one view. But then also, this is a game they really wanted, right? Like, if you think about it, you can't get much better of an opportunity of home and away. The big dogs, the team celebrating its 50th anniversary, the established team on the market, back-to-back champions, team that's getting big crowds, it's attracting an interest from around North America. And you got the upstart Eagles, right? Who themselves are, been making waves with their start to the CPL season, some of the marketing, signing all the BC players, their fire kits, right? Like, this was a chance to kind of showcase of, all right, well, let's go up against the Whitecaps. Okay, even if you go down swinging, go in there swinging. You have literally nothing to lose, right? Because like you're in the scenario where 120% of the pressure would have been on the Whitecaps in that scenario. So yeah, it's definitely I imagine that'll be the feeling in the locker room. But I think what's nice for VFC, it's all right, well, that's out the window. Just focus on getting to bigger heights. And a big way to do that is playoffs, right? If that's gonna you want to attract a you want to attract interest from around the lower mainland. It's to keep winning and it's to make the playoffs. And they're certainly on a good track to keep at it. So I'm very curious to see this bounce back. They play York away, this York team's been hard to gauge. Having watched both of their games, they've had great moments in the first one, probably should have won against Ottawa. This weekend against Forge, less so. They were just kind of, Forge just ended up getting the better of them by a good amount in this game. Go out and get a third win. That would really send a statement of, oh, okay, this Eagles team, they responded well to that setback. And I'll be interested to see. But one thing that was I did find interesting in the lineup is Tommy Wilton Jr. rotated his Calgary side pretty good. First start for Lucas Dias. He mixed up the back three a bit. He ended up switching things. Afshin Gottlieb ran back the same lineup for the third straight game. In fact, he only made one change on the bench, bringing James Cameron in for Matteo Campagna. That ended up paying off because unfortunately, Caden Cheung picked up an injury. Hopefully, one that's not too serious, but it meant first minutes for James Cameron. I'm curious to see what Afshin Gottlieb does because there's not much rest. They play in York on Friday after playing Calgary on Tuesday. Do we see some rotation? Because that is something to keep an eye on. That you wonder if they had some more fresh legs in the lineup from the start against Cavalry. Could that have changed things? Well, maybe we'll see some of those fresh legs against York.
I mean, it was something I asked after the Halifax match, and I understood going with the exact same lineup for that one, given the success. But I think given the quality in the squad and given the depth they should have this season, that is something they're going to have to, you can't just run out the same 11 match in, match out. And I think you have to find ways to get those other contributors involved, and, young guys like TJ Jaheed, James Cameron, right? They're going to have a role to play ultimately this season if you're going to be really successful. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing that. And ultimately, I think another good weekend of football in the Canadian Premier League, and exciting Canadian Championship happenings as we're speaking right now. That's what Simcoe County Rovers and TFC are playing in the Canadian Championship, which is always fun. I mean, it is 4-0, so that's a little bit less fun, but the magic of the cup still remains, and yeah, just looking forward to catching all of that Canadian Championship action as the competition unfolds.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting. And Whitecaps Cavalry, tasty matchup for a lot of reasons. I think it'll be intriguing because Cavalry's got good history against the Whitecaps, albeit a very different Whitecaps team over the last few years. It's evolved now under Vanni Sartini. But for what it's worth, out of the CPL, Cavalry and Forge are probably the two you'd want to avoid because Cavalry does have experience. They played Orlando recently this year in Champions Cup. Yeah, it was a bit of a learning lesson, 6-1 on aggregate, but they were in preseason mode at this time, and I'm sure they've learned a lot from that matchup. So it'll be intriguing to see what version of Cavalry ends up showing up. Can they use that experience to make things competitive across two legs? Be the million-dollar question. But yeah, a lot of tasty ties. I'm very curious to see how the rest of that first round, how TSS Rovers can compete against Pacific next week, how Canada Honda does against Halifax. Who between Forge and York gets a crack at Montreal? Because both teams have history with them, so that should be interesting. And then, of course, lastly, who ends up playing the winner of TFC is either that Halifax Saint-Laurent. So do we see Halifax TFC across two legs? I guess the only other option is Ottawa Valor. Does Ottawa, they have high hopes. This is a team that wants to win trophies. Can they get a win over Valor? Can maybe Valor? That's something where a team that isn't in the greatest of moments. What's beautiful about the cup is everything goes out the window. If Valor wins, it's a 90-minute game. That could maybe give them a bit of a momentum and something to galvanize around. So keep an eye out on Valor next week. But yeah, lots of tasty ties and excited to keep an eye on more Canadian soccer. But that kind of leads us nicely to the last few notes. Just some other things to keep an eye on. League One BC is back this weekend. There's a triple header of matchups, six games total, because of course, men's and women's games end up going back to back. Some tasty ones all on Sunday. Of course, you're gonna have to kind of take your pick of where you end up splitting your time. If you're up in Kamloops, you got the beauty of Rivers end up playing Altitude, so that's gonna be a good test for both of those teams with high hopes. Meanwhile, the defending champions, the defending treble winners in League One BC, the Whitecaps, they end up playing Unity. A home, which will be a good game. Unity making some big moves off the field last year in terms of ownership. They'll want to step up and get off to a good start this year after their women's team really impressed in particular, but they'll also want to get the men's team going. So that'll be a good one. Then lastly, one that's really worth watching, Burnaby FC makes their debut. They host Harbourside out in Burnaby. I think it's Deer Lake, but double check. Don't quote me on that one. That's definitely one where I'll be keeping an eye on how Burnaby fares. They made some intriguing signings on the men's and women's side. The women's side, some top League One standouts from the past. On the men's side, some former CPLers, some good youth sports players. They're not messing around. So that will be worth keeping an eye on how they do on Harbourside, who had a quietly solid first season last year and will want to push in the playoffs in men's and women. But the last piece of news, other than that, just this is Whitecaps. We mentioned there's Whitecaps news. The Whitecaps are going to the Champions Cup again. Of course, this is different. The men's Champions Cup is over, but for those that are familiar, there's a women's Champions Cup which is launching, which is great, by the way, long overdue with the NWSL being around for a decade now. A lot of growth in Central America. It's also called Liga MX Femenil, which has been blowing up over the last few years. They're now doing a Champions Cup. And of course, Canada is involved with through League One for now. I think the goal is to kind of test run it this year. And then, of course, next year, I have Project 8 teams involved. But as the defending League One Canada winners, the Vancouver Whitecaps look to or have been confirmed to have earned that spot that Canada will have this year. So that's great. That means Whitecaps women team will head down and play a team from El Salvador. And if they win, they'll then get to a group stage, if I'm not mistaken. So that's super exciting that the Whitecaps, right now, as it's announced, there's just not all the teams are announced. Tigres, Alajuense, and Whitecaps are the only three teams that had teams in both men's and women's Champions Cup this year. So a bit of a hat tip, I guess, to the Whitecaps. And on the women's side, it's exciting that they'll now have a pro team to run in Project 8 next year that will be worth keeping an eye on, if especially if they can this team this year can have a decent little showing in Champions Cup.
I mean, yeah, it's just I think really encouraging that you can kind of add this now to the success that the academy squad had last season in that tournament over in Europe, right? Like it's just nice to see that the Whitecaps are starting to truly kind of round out their organization and take some of this academy stuff that's been going on for years and I think take it to another level. So also fantastic that this is now a competition that exists and that these big clubs are getting involved with on the women's side. And very happy to see the Whitecaps be at the forefront of that. Yeah, just to pick up on the one thing you said about League One BC this weekend, it is, if you're interested in Burnaby FC Harbourside, it is at Burnaby Lake West, field number 5, if you want the real specifics. So yeah, I would encourage you to, if you're in the Greater Vancouver area, either check that one out or head out to Thunderbird, where the Whitecaps Academy will be their setup there will be playing. So I think we're going to be at one of two of those matches. So if you are in attendance and you see us strolling around, be sure to say hi and what's up, and yeah, and have a chat. So looking forward to that League One BC action. It's come around quickly, but I can't wait for the season to get underway. And then you got your regular slate of, we obviously talked about all the MLS action, but a nice weekend in the Canadian Premier League ahead as well. So looking forward to all that good stuff, Alex.
Yeah, make sure to check out local football. See, Vancouver's in York. Pacific plays Cavalry away Sunday. Meanwhile, you got Whitecaps in New York on Saturday. Those are your three local football options, and they're set up nicely on a Sunday where you can go tuck in. You can go to Burnaby and go see their first ever games. That'll be a fun storyline. It's history. Anytime you see a new club play its first games, it's always a fun moment. I'm sure Burnaby will rally nicely around that. If not, go check out that Whitecaps team. That's one that won the Juan de Fuca and both men and women last year. You can go check out, for example, that women's team. You could see a team that's going to be playing in CONCACAF later this year. So you can kind of get a precursor of what they'll hope is another special year after all the trophies they won, in 2023. Or if you're out in Kamloops, of course, Rivers Altitude should be a good game, both teams with title aspirations on the men's and women's side. So yeah, overall a lot to be excited about, especially this weekend. There's no Whitecaps, no VFC, no Pacific. Well, there's a perfect opportunity to go tuck into League One British Columbia. So definitely here on the third sub, we'll be making sure to tuck into it so we can talk about it next week. But hope whoever's listening, if you do have that opportunity, that you are able to take it. Of course, on the weekend, if you have other things going on, no shame at all. It's Vancouver, it's beautiful. Or if you're elsewhere in this great planet of ours, just as long as you're enjoying it, doesn't always have to be football. That's all that matters. But if you are in the weeds like we are, League One BC, no better way to spend a beautiful sunny weekend day, in my honest opinion. But on that note, that's pretty much about all we've got for this week's episode, episode 202, loaded episode as always. A lot to touch on, but we went through it at a pretty decent pace. So, hat tip, after a couple of lengthier episodes over the past few weeks, we kept things a bit more on that side. So I hope you enjoyed. And I guess just on that note, if you have and enjoyed listening, do feel free to leave any reviews, comments, etc. It all means a lot to us. But on that note, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Gongiruzic, on Blue Sky. And of course, on Instagram and Threads at AGR on the case. I'll be keeping up with all the football possible, be it League One BC, be it CPL, MLS, etc. All the assignments that I've got going on. And yeah, we'll be back soon with episode 203. But I'll let Sam take this one into the home stretch of 202.
Yeah, just to pick up on one League One BC note, I don't have like the perfect information here, but if you're not already following AFTN on Twitter, Michael McCall, who obviously runs AFTN and does a lot of great commentary work with League One BC, I believe he's doing a feature match of the week for League One BC. He'll be on that call. So I would check out their social feeds in terms of, if you're not in BC or you're not in the Lower Mainland, you can't make it out to a match, but you want to take in some action, be sure to kind of follow along there, because I think there'll definitely be some broadcasting kind of league-wide for every single weekend. And then for each of the teams beyond that, it's kind of depends what the individual team is doing, but there is some good streaming content available to you there if you seek it out. So I'd encourage you, if you want to check it out and you're not able to make it out, that is an option as well. But you can find me, as always, at Samuel_Roboat on Twitter, at thethirdsub.ca. Really been appreciating all the support we've been receiving recently. Lots of people checking out the site, getting involved post-match day. So I hope you've been enjoying that. We've certainly had a lot of fun putting together the content for you. So yeah, as always, in terms of the podcast, subscribe, leave a review. If you have a question, if you have something you'd like us to talk about on the show, you can always interact with us on socials or on the website. So thanks for listening, everyone. Enjoy the football this weekend, and we'll chat again soon.